Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Here's your host, Zach Gelb.
Here we go, fourth and final hour. We're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. Home is so much more than a house. It's the home of your dreams, and for 30 years, they've been making it better. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. Also, coming up on Sunday, I will be in Vermont, by the way, but I will be watching the AFC and NFC Conference Championship games. And Sunday on CBS, it's the AFC Championship game featuring a matchup of two contrasting styles as Derrick Henry and the Titans head to Kansas City to face Mahomes and that seemingly unstoppable Chiefs offense, with the winner heading to Super Bowl 54. It all begins with a special two-hour edition of the NFL Today beginning at 1 Eastern, 10 Pacific, only on CBS. So we have a whole lot going on. AFC-NFC divisional weekend in the books. We'll get to that in just a second. Clemson and LSU all tied up at 7. It was a punt fest earlier on in this game. Clemson strikes first on the Trevor Lawrence run, and then you had Burrow just find Ja'Marr Chase for a perfect dime, a Dilfer dime, let's say, on that 52-yard touchdown pass by Joe Burrow. So buckle in, as there's a minute left in this first quarter, and we're all tied up at 7 apiece with Clemson facing a 3rd and 6 on their own 30. And Trevor Lawrence going to run around, and he's going to get a first down pass, bringing it close to midfield. So you have Clemson moving the football, so maybe the floodgates get opened up a little bit here with both teams now getting on the board via two touchdowns, one on the run by Lawrence and then one on the big bomb by Joe Burrow. So we'll keep you up to date until we sign off at 10 p.m. Eastern, and that will be 7 p.m. Pacific on Clemson and LSU each time there's a big play, turnover, or a scoring drive. But we have so much to get to in the world of sports right now. It's really been a crazy day with the divisional round games that we have to recap, and then also this entire Astros situation. Because if you would have said to me in July around the trade deadline, how do you project the future of Jeff Luhnow? I would say statue is on its way in Houston. Because they go out and acquire Zach Greinke. They also were able to acquire in previous years Gerrit Cole. And in addition to that, Justin Verlander. They've won a World Series after acquiring Greinke to have a starting rotation of Verlander, Cole, and Greinke. You would think another World Series would be coming. And then a lot of things, when the playoffs really did commence for the Astros, did start to go south. You had that disgraceful incident with Brandon Taubman, the former assistant GM, who couldn't be a good person in victory when they did punch their ticket to go to the ALCS, where he was berating a female reporter and was sticking up for Osuna, who had his own domestic violence issues, where he was actually suspended for. So that was the first ugliness. And then Luhnow did an embarrassing job handling himself at the press conference. And then from there, the Astros, who were such a likable team at times, really became unlikable. And it wasn't because of the players, because Altuve's a likable story, Correa's a likable story, Springer too, Bregman as well, even though some people got annoyed with the bat flips and all that in the postseason. But that's not me. I'm not antiquated in those approach. And I thought it was fun between Bregman and also Juan Soto in the World Series. It was cool. But because of the Taubman situation and the way they handled that, the Astros became very unlikable. And you even had the Yankees accusing them of cheating with the whistling, and you had A.J. Hinch, who laughed off the entire situation at his press conference. So I didn't know what to make about some of the cheating allegations. You hear rumors about every team. But because of the Taubman situation, and even this is coming as a Met fan, how the Nationals, every opportunity they were faced with, no matter what the deficit was, they found a way to come back and prove everybody wrong. Going into that World Series, the Nationals were a very likable story, and the Astros were not. And the Nationals go on to win that World Series, and that wasn't the biggest of problems for the Astros, because a little while after that, you hear about this cheating scandal. And with this cheating scandal, we were waiting and waiting and waiting for a punishment. And it ends up being a one-year ban for Jeff Luhnow. It ends up being a one-year ban for A.J. Hinch, a $5 million fine for the organization, which was the max they were allowed to go, and a loss of two first-round picks and a loss of two second-round picks in the year of 2020 and 2021. So I think that was a pretty significant punishment. It was baseball sending a message that if you want to think about cheating and using, because stealing signs are part of the game, and baseball, there's been a lot of cheating scandals over the years, but you can't be using monitors. You can't be using technology to do so, especially after the warning that was issued with that Red Sox Apple Watch when you look back at the timeline and all of that. So baseball sent a big statement. So you get that message that that was the punitive action, and then you find out at Jim Crane's press conference that, oh yeah, by the way, little newsflash, I'm firing A.J. Hinch and I'm firing Jeff Luhnow. And then right now, this is the biggest story in sports. And what Crane said, which I thought hit the nail right on the head, is he said neither one of them started it, talking about Hinch and Luhnow, but neither one of them did anything about it. And yes, you hear A.J. Hinch was smashing televisions and the monitors because he was upset about it, but he didn't get it to stop. And I know Hinch released a classy statement today, so give him at least credit for that. And then you have Luhnow, who is on the defensive mode, and is saying, I'm not a cheater. I didn't orchestrate this. I didn't know anything about it. Blah, 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 blah. And he's going to go on his pity tour right now. And that's what he's doing. Let me play the small violin for Jeff Luhnow. That is what Jeff Luhnow's saying. And right away, Jeff Luhnow, he throws the support staff under the bus. He throws the players under the bus. And he throws Alex Cora under the bus. And Alex Cora is going to be the next domino to fall in this situation where it's going to get ugly. It's going to get nasty. He's going to get suspended because him and the players were really the masterminds behind this. They really were. However, there were position of powers that didn't do enough to stop this when they knew it was going on and they could have prevented it, but they chose not to. So I believe A.J. Hinch will manage again. Jeff Luhnow, I'm never going to say never. But after that statement he released today, I thought that was a coward statement. I really did. Because it was, I accept responsibility, but I had to say that, and I really don't think I'm at fault here. So it was a bad look by Jeff Luhnow. It really was. And Cora's in a big problem as well, and who knows if the Red Sox will fire him. And the player that really survives out of this, who is now a manager, and his name has been all thrown about it today, is Carlos Beltran. Because what the MLB did, and it was smart here, they're not going to suspend the players. Even though the players were involved in this, but you completely dismantle that team and you hurt your sport in a big way if you go suspend 8 to 15 players for 80 games or whatever it would be, or for a year. So the MLB was smart. You hit the manager, you hit the general manager, the people that were in authority. Maybe they then recommended to Jim Crane that they should move on from Hinch and Luhnow, and they would save him a little bit on the punishment, even though I thought the punishment was severe and I thought the punishment was fair. But who knows, maybe that does do a little working behind the scenes, and that's where we result today. So that's a major story right now. It's a huge story in the world of sports. And one other thing about that, people on Twitter, they get on their high horse, and they want either life or death when something like this happens. I don't understand why people don't think this isn't severe. and this isn't a harsh enough punishment. And some people, I'd be getting a few of these tweets at Zach Gelb. Let's vacate the championships. That will really teach them. Vacating championships are the worst thing that could ever happen in a punitive action. It makes zero sense to me. Because we watch a championship happen, and now you're going to tell me, oh, let's throw it out and never acknowledge it. No, that's ridiculous. I hate when the NCAA does it. MLB's not going to do it, and good for MLB. And, you know, I'll say this on MLB. I think they acted appropriately. I think they acted in a timely fashion, and a good job on them waiting until this Monday, coming off divisional weekend and with the national championship game here to steal the headlines. And they understood, and they were cognizant, we're not going to kill the players here. We're going to hold the authority. The people in authority positions are going to be the ones that are going to be held here, and they're going to have to face the blame and face the music. Because if they went out there, and I don't know what players are involved, who knows, but if they did go suspend Altuve, Correa, Springer, Bregman, you are damaging that sport that more than ever needs stars and needs personalities day in and day out. So good on them for holding the people that could have stopped it, not the people that initiated it. They held them accountable for not stopping it because they could have said, stop what they were doing. Hinch smashing a monitor isn't enough. And I don't buy that Luno didn't know about it. So that's a good job out of MLB today. I think they handled it the right way. I like the way that they did handle it. And then you get to the NFL, the other big storylines, where you look at Tennessee and Baltimore from this weekend. That's a great job. A sensational job out of the Tennessee Titans. Getting off to that 7-0 start. The two 4th-and-1 stops. And then from the 4th-and-1 stops, converting it into 2 touchdowns. You had the bomb to Khalif Raymond. Then you then had the Henry 66-yard run that did lead into the Derrick Henry touchdown pass. That was a great moment. You had the Chiefs going down 24-0, and then in a blink of an eye going on a 51-7 run. No, that was not a basketball game. That was an NFL game. 51-7 run to go win that game. And if you're a Kansas City fan, you have to be thinking that this is your year. And if Andy Reid doesn't get these victories the next two games with no Belichick, no Harbaugh in his way, there's no excuses for Andy Reid. So that's the AFC side. And the NFC, Rodgers Wilson was phenomenal. Looked like it was going to be a blowout. Wilson did all he could to get that team back in it. And then 2 third-down plays, Rodgers to Davante Adams, in addition to Rodgers to Jimmy Graham. I know people are freaking out. Oh, he didn't get it. He didn't get it. I thought the yellow line was off, by the way. I thought the yellow line was off. With that being said, I've watched it, and about like 80 times out of 100, I say I thought he clearly got it. And then there's times where I go, as Tony Romo would say, ooh, wait a second, Jim. I don't know if he got it. I don't think there was conclusive enough evidence to overturn it, so I thought it was the right decision to stick with the play and the call that was made on the field. And then finally, you did have 49ers and Vikings from this weekend. Vikings not getting a touchdown, having to settle for a field goal off the Jimmy G mistake was huge. And then in addition to that, when you had Kirk Cousins throw an interception to Sherman in a short field, the 49ers were able to put the ball in the end zone. And at 20-10, that game was over. So those are the moments from the last 24, 48 hours in sports, 72 hours as well. You have the AFC, NFC divisional games. You have the national championship game right now. And also, you have this Astros situation. And I actually think the best moment from the weekend, by the way, Bill Cowher, Jimmy Johnson get it into the Hall of Fame. David Baker, big old burly David Baker walking on in and giving the news to Bill Cowher. And you see such a serious guy like Bill Cowher crying because it means so much. That was such a special moment. And I didn't think anything could top that. And then you get Jimmy Johnson, who I was actually fearful for Jimmy Johnson's health. When they told him the news, he could not speak. His heart must have been racing a million miles per hour. He was tearing up. And both of those coaches, in that moment, they thanked the right people. They don't make it about them. They thanked their players. They thanked their assistant coaches. It was such a cool and awesome and special moment to see. So that moment with Cowher and then Jimmy Johnson were my favorite moments of the weekend. Loved it, loved it, loved it. But what was your favorite moment? What was the moment from the NFL and the AFC and NFC divisional rounds that stood out to you the most? You want to give me an opinion on this entire situation with the Astros and how the punishment being on the table? Or how about LSU Clemson, as Clemson settled for a field goal and now it's 10-7 Clemson on top of LSU? Have open phone lines for you in the next segment, 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Grab a line, we'll come on back. And when we do return on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio, there was one thing this weekend that I didn't love, and I really couldn't stand that it happens to do with officiating and the presentation of officiating. We'll get to that when we return on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Sports Radio.
He's glad you're still here.
That's why I love this job. I get paid to scream woo in a microphone. Zach Gelb Show. Woo! CBS Sports Radio. Woo! Mikey B in the house. Woo! Woo! Tom D. Benedetto in the house. Woo! And Jay Berman on the updates. Woo!
Now back to the Zach Gelb Show.
CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, is sponsored by Geico. Whether you own or rent, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home is hard work, so get a quote at geico.com. Easy. Something I can't stand, and this has been brewing for a while, but I really reached my boiling point over the weekend, and it was on Sunday. I was watching ESPN's Countdown to Kickoff, whatever the show is. You have 9,000 shows on before the games start, especially when you have a 3 o'clock start and a 6:40 start on a Sunday. Nice job by the NFL to do the conference scheduling on the Sunday in the divisional round as well. I enjoyed not having the game right at 1 o'clock. You get a little bit of a late start to your day. You get back in, do some things, and you could find a way to get at your television by 3 o'clock and then not move until you have to go to bed and you have a little dinner factored in as well. But I was watching the ESPN, one of the shows, they were on in New Orleans for the national championship game that's going on right now with Clemson and LSU. And they had Sean Payton on the set. It was Samantha Ponder, Sean Payton, I want to say Teddy Bruschi, maybe Randy Moss and someone else. I forget exactly who, but they have Sean Payton out there. And I understand you have to ask the questions and you have to ask him about the situation with Kyle Rudolph. And I get the easy, cheesy TV narrative is to go, hey, coach, the last 3 years, look at what happened. The Minneapolis miracle. Then you had the no call in the NFC title game. And then controversy once again when you have Kyle Rudolph pushing off and you lose on that touchdown. Can we stop making the Kyle Rudolph play as it was this great controversial play? I thought it was a good no call. I thought there was pushing and shoving by both teams. But I understand you having to ask the question because you have Sean Payton on set. If we had Sean Payton in studio, we would ask him too because it would create a headline. I totally get that side of the business. But good for Sean Payton, by the way, for saying, and I'm paraphrasing here, you can't compare what happened last year to what happened this year. And right there, you think it should end. But they have these pre-produced TV segments, and they have these rundowns, even when it's live, that they're going to get to whatever they're talking about, even if the coach pretty much just squashed any more need of that conversation. So who do they go with? And this is the part that really annoys me. They go to their refereeing expert, John Parry, or whatever his name is. John Parry is there, and he goes, like, hey, coach, wait a second. I actually thought you guys got screwed. I would have called pass interference. Enough with these former officials on the television breaking down every single play, every single call. I've had enough of it. absolutely enough. I can't stand it anymore. Every single flag now. We have Mike Pereira here. Mike, what do you think? We have John Parry here. What do you think? We have Gene Steratore here. Gene, what do you think? Do we need someone on every single hold, on every single pass interference to tell us the obvious? Can't Nance and Romo do that? Can't Aikman and Buck do that? Hopefully Booger and Joe Tessitore could do that. Do we need to sit there and have every single official be the know-it-all and tell us, oh, this is how I would have called it. This is how what should have been done. And the most obnoxious part about it is when seven or eight plays go by and they go, hey, let's take a look back at this play. Something that's very minor should have been called. The only time I want to hear from those officials is when no one has a clue what's going on with the specific rule. I think Mike Pereira is actually good on TV, but I don't need to hear Pereira and Blandino and, all the other Parry, Steratore. I don't need to hear them over and over and over again. Oh, there was offsides. Let's go to John Parry. John, what do you have? Well, this player moved before the ball was snapped. Oh, great analysis. We really needed that one. But what they did on Sunday was so stupid. And when Peyton already gave the answer and he gave the proper answer, to go to John Parry to try to tell Sean Payton that he's wrong and that they got screwed, enough. And all it does is it creates people, and I'm not saying the officiating's good, because there's enough things to complain about with the officiating. And there's enough problems to complain about with Al Riveron. But when we sit there and we analyze every single play, all it does is when the game is over, my team got screwed. Second quarter, the officiating expert made a big deal about a hold that wasn't called. We understand these officials, this is in real time. And all these officiating experts are doing, oh, well, I had 5 minutes to look at it. I had about 15 different angles. And 10 plays later, this is what should have happened. This is what should have been called. And then all we have to hear afterwards, after every game, and the officiating couldn't even be a big story in the game. There's a fan that calls in or a fan that tweets in and says, my team got screwed in the second quarter. Mike Pereira said that something happened that should have gone my way that didn't. But that's the one that really annoys me the most. I forget which game I was watching a few weeks ago where they went to a play after eight or nine plays did transpire after that to show you why something was so insignificant, why there should have been a penalty flag. I can't stand the refereeing over and over again being a topic. I understand there's situations where we're going to complain, like what happened in Green Bay, how they didn't rule that a clear and obvious fumble. It's a disgrace. You know when I need the officiating? When there's a loophole in the rules, for example, the Patriot-Tennessee game. That's when I want the experts. That's when the experts could be very good. But when it's over, an obvious hold call or every pass interference, enough is enough. I don't need to hear these referees on 75% of the broadcast. We don't need them on 75% of the broadcast after every single penalty flag. Oh, there's a delay of game. Let's go to Mike Pereira. Mike, what do you got? Troy and Joe, the clock ran out. That's why the flag was called. That's what they do in some of these calls and some of these broadcasts. It's nauseating. As a fan, I can't take it anymore. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Brian in Portland, Oregon. He's next up on CBS Sports Radio with Zach Gale. Brian, what's shaking, man?
Hey, Zach, how you doing, man?
Doing great. What you got for us, brother?
Good. Well, I was just going to say real quick, I'm a Saints fan, and I totally agree with everything you just said. So, but I called to talk about the Houston asterisk.
Sure.
I agree with you to a point. I think that the punishment that came down was great. I think it was, it's hardcore, and I also agree with you that trying to suspend individual players would be really bad for the game. It would be really tough to do, and it's going to punish, other teams that have nothing to do with it. But what, helped me understand how them vacating that championship, which they stole, And I will admit, I'm a diehard Dodgers fan, okay? But, you know, given the way we lost that Game 7, given the way that series went, you know, tell me how that would hurt the sport to take the rings away from all those guys and have that championship
vacate. Well, let me ask you this, Brian. So then for every steroid user that's been on a team, should we take away their championships too?
Totally different situation. You're talking
but
about
still
a
cheating.
Team that made a concerted effort as a team to steal that championship. I mean, so what about the Black Sox scandal then?
I don't think we should vacate any championships. I don't think we should ever vacate championships. There were rules in place. The rules were violated, and it didn't work in the favor of that year. Excuse me. What I should say was that year people got away with things. You know, I look back at all these eras, and I could look at everything across baseball and say, ah, two players did this, three players did that. I just don't get. For example, if you're Dodgers, then get named champions. Do you feel any better about it? You didn't win that championship.
No. Listen. I'm not suggesting that. That's
okay.
A totally different situation. I'm not asking for the Dodgers to be named the championship or the champions. That wouldn't be right at all. But I am saying to just have 2017 blank and to make those guys all give their rings back, that's completely different than saying, oh, well, we're going to give it to the Dodgers.
So let me ask you this, Brian.
I don't think there's a single real Dodgers fan that would want that.
Yeah, so that was more of the point that I was making was when you have a champion crowned, because I guess, hey, there's no negative technically if you pull the championship and you just want to keep it blank, there's no negative. But not every single player on that team was participating in that scandal. But with that being said, here's what I'll equate it to. Here's what I'll equate it to if you want to make a fair equation. When they took away Reggie Bush's Heisman Trophy, do you think that's right? Even though they had the benefits and all that, do you think that's right? To me, I still saw those moments happen. I'm still going to talk about whether you keep the championship or not, the Astros being champions. Still, hey, now it has an added note on it. They had this cheating scandal. That's always going to be talked about. I just don't love that idea personally of vacating a championship and taking it away. And really, where my root of this problem actually begins is, and hey, this is going to be a conversation in the next few weeks, is you look at the Hall of Fame, and I appreciate the phone call, Brian. Thanks for making it and adding to the show. But if you look at the Hall of Fame, baseball, and there's some guys that have definitely taken steroids that are in the Hall of Fame. There's no doubt about it. But for baseball, we try to ignore that era in some of these Hall of Fame voters where let's not put a guy in because he cheated. Barry Bonds cheated. Roger Clemens cheated. I can't stand Roger Clemens. I can't stand him. But they're still great players, and you still need to tell that history of the game in the Hall of Fame. Just like when you tell the histories of champions, I don't want to vacate the Astros title because it was still a part of the history of the sport. And we truly don't know how much they did benefit from this. Now, they did it for a reason, but we don't know how much truly they benefited from this. I still think they had a great team. We'll see what the future does have in store. I just don't like taking away that championship. But as a fan, you have every right to say, yes, the Houston Astros won the World Series, but they were associated with this scandal that got them this action. I for all my life, like when Louisville, when that situation happened and they vacated the championship, I think it's so stupid that we make people take championship banners back, give back rings or whatever. It makes zero sense to me. They won. People are going to think about that championship a specific way for the rest of people's lives, and they got hit with the big punishment. I don't believe, though, that we need to take away the title. Because did the starting pitching staff, I know Fiers knew about it, but they weren't using that to their advantage. It was for the hitters. That's where it was being used. And how many guys are using it? What all that? It's complicated. So I think if you take away that championship, you got to take away a lot of other championships, and I just don't like it. When we return, Onsides, Offsides, we'll tell you which side of the fence that I'm on with five big burning questions in sports.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
Hey, this is Howie.
And this is Nick.
From the Backstreet Boys.
And you're listening to The Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. And guess what?
nationwide on CBS Sports Radio. This is the Zach Gelb Show.
Oh my God, we're back again.
That's another thing with this whole vacating championships. As a fan, does it really make you feel better if they took away another team's championship? I couldn't give a rat's you-know-what if they took away the Astros championship or not. In terms of, oh, they took it away. Yeah! Makes me feel great. No, come on. They still won the championship. You may look at it in a different way, but you can't sit there, in my opinion, and say, hey, let's take away the championship. What's the point? Does it make you feel that much better? Do you wake up and have a new perspective on life? Nah, come on. We're eliminating history. It just adds on to the history. People could look at that history now in a tainted way. All right, let's get to onsides or offsides. Huh?
Zach's taking on the most polarizing issues in sports. Which side of the line of scrimmage will he end up on?
Offside. Defense number 69.
It's Onsides, Offsides with Zach Gelb on CBS Sports Radio.
Mr. Mikey B, Mike Bisaglia. It's 17-14, Clemson on top of LSU. LSU is driving, though. And I didn't have any dinner during the duration of the show, so it actually set up perfectly. I'm going to take a 15-minute subway ride. Actually, I may Uber home because I want to get home for this game. And I'll have some food, and I'll watch the second half of the national championship game.
What we eating?
I don't know what we eating. I usually know. I didn't take anything out to make. Actually, I do have some chicken sausage in the fridge, but I think I want to save that for tomorrow. So
Order in wings.
Ooh, order in wings. Oh, Tom DiBenedetto with a DiBenedetto driver tip right there. A DiBenedetto driver tip could be better than Mike's options. What's your podcast called again? You change it all the time.
Mike Delivers. I changed it one time. Mike Delivers.
Mike Delivers or DiBenedetto Delivers. Little rivalry there between the board op and the producer.
He can have the delivery and the math spheres. Like, he can have that. I don't need to challenge that. That's his zone, and I'm okay with it.
D-Ben just said, I don't want anything to do with the delivery food industry. He wants nothing about that besides the tips. Tips probably nice, right?
Yeah, I don't blame him.
Here we go.
All right, here we go. After Patrick Mahomes blew the game open with an early fourth quarter touchdown toss to tight end Blake Bell to make it 48-31 following a successful PAT. Offensive tackle Eric Fisher couldn't resist joining in the fun with the fans in the crowd. He grabbed two cans of beer from the crowd, smashed them together like Stone Cold Steve Austin, and poured it on himself. It was amazing. He said, you can never put a nice, cold, refreshing, smooth Bud Light in front of an offensive lineman and not expect him to enjoy it, you know, Fisher said. I've got to find those guys. I owe them a couple of beers. Onside or offsides, Fisher's TD celebration was the best of the playoffs.
No question. Whenever you could relate to two fans in the stands drinking beers and you take their beers and you smash them over their head, your head and have a little WWE moment, it's awesome. The only better celebration I've seen this year, and I know this goes further beyond the question, just the playoffs, it's by far and away the best celebration of the playoffs, was when we got to see on the Quinton Nelson touchdown that didn't count when they picked up the big offensive lineman and did the keg stand. That was excellent. This one, though, it's the best that we've seen in the playoffs. I remember the Titans did the whole Remember the Titans dance. And by the way, remember the fat offensive lineman and Remember the Titans? I just saw a picture of him the other day. He is ripped. He's jacked. The big old white fat offensive lineman, I think it was number 73 with the big belly. He's now in great shape, but there's no doubt about it. Fisher's touchdown celebration was the best of the playoffs. Child, please. That's too easy of a question. Onsides.
Freaks me out when you see guys like that when they look some way, a certain way, and then all of a sudden they're a different human being. Bizarre to see. All right, after the 49ers slammed the Vikings 27-10 to advance to the NFC Championship game, Richard Sherman wrote on Twitter that he was served with PED and HGH drug tests, saying, quote, ha 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 ha, ball out and get the double dip, PED and HGH tests, ha ha ha, gotta love it.
We gotta make that a liner, by the way, ha 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 ha.
The NFL says that their drug tests are random. On Saturday, the Vikings receivers just got three targets, one reception for 9 yards, and Sherman also had an interception. Onside or offside, the Sherman drug test was random.
He's a Hall of Famer. He's a heck of a player. He's a great player. I had enough of his talking, though, after this one. I didn't get the whole stuff at the podium where everyone's questioning his greatness and all that. You've been a great player for a long time. But whatever you have to use for motivation, that's fine by me. In terms of this question, I think the drug test is random. I'm going to say onsides on this one. Number three, though.
Maybe I'm naive, though. Who knows?
You never know.
Before the 2019 NFL season began, many of the pundits had the Ravens as a team on the outside of the playoffs looking in. But after an historic season from Lamar Jackson, in which Baltimore reeled off 14 straight wins, the team from the Charm City finished 14-2 with the number one overall seed representing the AFC. We all know what happened on Saturday when the Titans smashed Baltimore 28-12. Onside or offsides, you would classify the 2019 season for the Ravens as a disappointment.
Disappointing ending, but a very successful season when you go 14-2 in the regular season after starting 2-2 and you lost the first playoff game. It's a growing pain when you have a young quarterback. That team didn't do him much help with some of the drop passes and some of the protection issues as well. And you let Derrick Henry run wild. They just ran into a team that played better than them that night. And on the big plays, they stood up and they met the music, and the Ravens did not. So a disappointing end, but a very successful season. A lot of people were picking the Steelers and the Browns to make it in the playoffs over them, and they ended up being the preeminent seed in the AFC. So offsides, this is not a disappointing season for a Ravens, just a disappointing finish.
Offside.
Number four, Mikey B.
After initially trailing Houston 24-0, the Chiefs went on an insane 51-7 run.
Say that again.
51-7 run.
You sure that happened? We weren't dreaming?
Unbelievable. There was a point in the game where KC scored 7 straight TDs. Besides beating up the Texans, Mahomes and crew took its punches versus the Arrowhead Stadium firework inventory. Towards the end of the fourth quarter, the Arrowhead video boards displayed a message that the Chiefs' performance resulted in the stadium running out of fireworks. Onside or offsides, poor job by the Arrowhead Stadium firework team for not having enough fireworks.
That's 100% onsides. When you have that big of a prolific offense like they have, you have to make sure you have enough fireworks. You should go into, see, when I plan, or even when I pack, I'll overpack. Or if I'm having people over, I'll over, excuse me. Wow, let me start that over. When I pack, I will overpack. When I order, I will order more than enough food, as I had some type of tongue twister there. I think I'm getting hungry for dinner. Anyway, though, I always try to bring more to the table than is what necessary. So the Chiefs should go into a game thinking, at the most, we'll score, I don't know, 10 touchdowns, let's say. So we should have enough for 10 rounds of fireworks. And clearly, they didn't overestimate it. They thought that it was going to be less touchdowns. So I think that was a bad job by the Chiefs. So on sides, that's a poor job of the Arrowhead Stadium staff.
And finally from me, Adam Schefter reported on Sunday that Drew Brees was recently approached by a non-ESPN network to gauge his interest in TV game analysts. Onside or offsides, Drew Brees would be a good color analyst for a network.
I don't see why not. You see some of these people that they put in the booth, and they're not all that good. Drew Brees is a very likable person, clearly has a great role in NFL history, in the annals of NFL history. I think he'd be more than fine as an analyst. Just because you're a great player doesn't make you out to be a great analyst, but I do think that he has the personality for that. And I would have no problem if he did go to the booth one day, but I don't think it's happening for at least 2 years. I think he's playing this year, and I think he's going to play next year, unless if they win a Super Bowl next season. So I think Drew Brees will eventually one day go to the booth. That could be a possibility. Maybe not. Maybe he just wants to relax and chill with the kids and the family. But I do think he would make for a good network analyst, so on sides. All right, shut it down. Fun show today. LSU has taken the lead 21-17. Great job out of Tom D. Benedetto. Also, Mikey B. as well. Tomorrow, I'll see if I'll be able to get through some sentences without getting my words twisted up and a little bit of a tongue twister. But fun show today. I'd like to thank the always talented Brian Jones for joining us. And also, I have to thank each and every one of you for calling, listening, and tweeting. We thank you so much for doing so. And we'll be back tomorrow right here in our time slot as it all gets started at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. Alex Boone will join us tomorrow, CJ Spiller as well, and Hall of Famer Reggie Jackson will join us to recap and get his reaction on all this craziness with the Houston Astros and the MLB. Keep it locked. Chris Moore coming up next on many of the same CBS Sports Radio affiliates. I'm Zach Gill. Have a great night, everybody. Peace!
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.